Our next guest on Downtown grew up in this area. He's been a mountaineering, fly fishing, and backcountry guide for more than 30 years. Has participated in several search and rescue organizations. He's also the author of a number of essays and articles about fly fishing, climbing, and life for many newspapers and magazines. His new book is a terrific read. When You Find My Body, The Disappearance of Geraldine Largay on the Appalachian Trail. We're pleased to be joined this afternoon by author Dee Dauphiny. Dee, what was it that drew you to the story of Geraldine Largay?
Well, I did not want to write the book originally because I was knee-deep in a novel. And the last book I wrote took 3 years of research, a World War I historical account. And so I was pretty happy writing the novel I was working on, but my agent called me and about 24 people who know my work and know me kept contacting me saying, you know, you got to write this story. It's not only a sad and heart-wrenching story, but there's some lessons there, I'm sure. So I kept getting the same message. When my agent called, I finally said, okay, I'll look at it. And it didn't take very long, about a month worth of research, preliminary stuff, just to realize that she was a lovely person and touched a lot of people on the trail. And I didn't want her story just to become an anecdote or a statistic. I wanted her, she was becoming part of Maine lore anyway. So I wanted her story told from a point of view where she might be able to help somebody in the future through her ordeal.
Absolutely. And you've certainly done exhaustive research on this as well. Let's start with some of the background for anybody who's not familiar with the story. This was a woman who had some hiking experience, but somewhat limited. She'd done some training, but was 60 years old and in pretty good physical condition. Certainly not somebody that you would expect on the outset to have any kind of troubles.
Well, she was 66 and had just, she and her husband had both just retired from the Atlanta area. And she was outdoorsy, but didn't have a lot of backpacking experience or camping experience outside of car camping. So she went to Warren Doyle's Appalachian Trail School that they have, I think he's in Tennessee. It's a week-long program that gets people mentally prepared for the Appalachian Trail. On her bucket list. So after her preparation through the Warren Doyle School, she did some training hikes for a period of 2 years with a couple of women that she knew that were outdoor enthusiasts also. And they, through trial and error and some bad experience, they gained the knowledge they needed to try to tackle it. She started out with a woman named Jane Lee, who's from the Washington, D.C. area, and also a nurse. Geraldine was a nurse, and Jane still is a practicing nurse. And they decided to give it a try, and they did a lot of preparation. She weighed things right down to grams, studied, read a lot of books, and did her preparation hikes. But unfortunately, she had no experience in the backcountry, like a lot of people hike the Appalachian Trail. And that's kind of the gist of part of the book. A lot of people tackle that through hike, you know, 2,200 miles, whatever it is. And they are accomplished at trail hiking, but have no woodscraft. And once they get off the trail, it's precarious at best. And sometimes they run into problems like she did.
And this was going to be what you call a flip-flop hike. Can you explain that for people who may not know?
Sure. The Appalachian Trail is, as long as we said, a couple 2,000-plus miles. And the unofficial halfway mark, it's not geographically halfway, but it's Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, where the Appalachian Trail Conservancy is. And the classic flip-flop hike is to hike from, start from Harper's Ferry, hike north to Katahdin, take a bus or a car or a train or a plane or go back to Harper's Ferry, and then hike from Harper's Ferry south down to Georgia. And what that does is it extends your season late in the year. So if you're a slow hiker, that's a good option for you. Instead of hiking in the Maine in September or October, you're hiking into Georgia. So it's a little better weather-wise.
We're talking with Dee Dauphiny. The book is When You Find My Body, The Disappearance of Geraldine Largay on the Appalachian Trail. Things were going pretty well for a while. Her husband was serving as what they call their Sherpa, driving along to help them out along the way. But then her friend was unable to continue the hike right around the time she entered into, in many ways, the most treacherous part of the journey on the northern part of the trail.
Correct. You know, at about the New Hampshire border, her, Jane Lee's daughter, adult daughter, was hiking in another state and broke her ankle, and she needed some help, so she had to leave. And they'd been hiking a couple months on their own and doing pretty well. Yeah, George, her, Jerry's husband, would drive forward and meet them at road crossings and trail crossings and help them with hostels and hotels and things like that. System was working pretty well, and it was working well enough, and the ladies were getting fit enough that although nobody, family and friends, wanted Jerry to tackle this trip alone, they kind of thought things over, and they were doing well enough that when Jane left, they said, you know, I think we can do this. So she wanted to continue on alone, and in those next few weeks were faithful for her. She was doing pretty well. She met a lot of great people on the trail that helped her. The trail culture helped her, but also, ultimately, the trail culture on the Appalachian Trail contributed to some of her problems, because the trail culture is lightweight, lightweight, lightweight. Mm. You don't need a compass, and you don't need a GPS spot locator. It's all just extra baggage and weight you don't need. And people had told her that on the trail. She had purchased a GPS spot locator, and a woman from Vancouver actually offered to help them, Jerry and her husband, set it up and show them how to use it. And they said, no, everybody says I don't need that, and it's just extra weight, even though it's a few ounces, and they left it behind. So she did not have that with her when she stepped off the trail and got lost.
Now, she was afraid of the dark. She didn't like sleeping outdoors, so she relied heavily on shelters, and in many ways, that really was helpful to you in piecing together this story, because you did an amazing job tracking down so many of the hikers that she ran into along her journey to help you fill in some of the missing parts of this story.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of research. You know, I spent about 3,000 emails, made trips to New York, Harpers Ferry, Georgia, Washington, D.C., all the New England states, talking firsthand to these folks and tracking them down through the warden's official report and through the shelter logs and word of mouth. I talked to one hiker and he said, well, no, but, you know, so-and-so, she hiked with her for 2 days. And so I tracked down that person, often only having a trail name. So that was a little bit difficult. It was a lot of investigative work. But she did not like being sleeping alone either. She was afraid of being alone, afraid of the dark. Those were her main fears.
But we learned so much about her as a person through those stories from people who ran into her along the trail. And then, as always, in mysteries of a sort, there's that red herring. And in many ways, it was the Navy survival, evasion, resistance, and escape school that led some people to conclude perhaps there was some sort of connection, maybe some vast conspiracy.
Yeah, and I apologize in advance. I kind of go after the conspiracy theorists pretty aggressively in the book, but I when you're writing a biography, it becomes very intimate with the subject. And, you know, like, I know what her Girl Scout troop number was in Florida in 1963. I know what high school she went to and some of her high school friends. And I know her classes she took at Grady Hospital in Atlanta back in the 60s. So you get to know the people in absentia very well. And, it was a little bit difficult reading some of the articles that were written about the conspiracy theories. And I had some connections with the military, thank God. So I ended up spending time with the commander of the Sears School at the time, who was commander of the school while she was being searched for.
Right.
And some of the Navy search and rescue experts and survival experts spent time in the woods with these guys, and they were pretty upset about it because they spent a lot of time looking for her. They bled, they went without sleep, they went without time with their families, and they searched for her for a long time. So I try to just address that in the book.
It's so easy, and anybody who's been in the Maine woods knows it's so easy to get turned around. But it seems in the story of Geraldine Largay, what's more crucial is what she did after getting off the trail. And I look to your description of the book here, if I can quote from it. You say, "When I was a boy growing up in Maine, my father and uncle taught me what to do if I became lost in the woods. Most all boys and girls were told in those days, unless you lived in a city. Most of the boys I knew then fished and hunted. When my dad and uncle were convinced I'd memorized what they taught me, they moved on to survival. First and foremost, they taught me how to use a compass and to never enter the woods without one, and about getting a bearing first." And you go on to explain about making a shelter, following the water, and what you do. And those were the things that, whatever Geraldine Largay did in her preparation didn't include that, or she didn't follow that instruction.
She didn't have the skill set, to be honest. She had a little small keychain that had a thermometer on it, and at the bottom, a little thumbnail sized compass, and it was completely useless. I remember those as a kid, playing around with those, and I thought, well, these don't work. And then I went out and purchased one, and just to play around with it, and it was 100% ineffective. So in addition to her not really having a skill set how to use a compass, she didn't have a functioning one with her. My hope is that people who are thinking about hiking the Appalachian Trail will take a little course, or some of the online courses that are available, buy a cheap, lightweight compass, the only way an ounce or two, and kind of have an idea how to use that and increase their spatial awareness on the trail. Are they heading north? Because the trail doesn't always head north-south. Sometimes it juts west and east. And if they kind of understand where they are and they do get lost, whether they're following a unblazed trail to a landmark or a water spring or something like that, you know, maybe we can save a life down the road. And all that years of research, last couple of years of research, and any anxiety anybody might have about her story being told, it's well worth it if we can save one life.
And I found it very powerful, too, when you caught up with perhaps the most famous person to get lost in the Maine woods, the late Don Fendler.
Yeah, that was really something. He had those steely blue eyes. Mm. He's a retired colonel, I believe. I didn't ask him, but I think he was a colonel. And, you know, he wintered in Pennsylvania and spent his summers in Maine on Sebasticook. And so I called him and I wrote him, and then he called me up, and I went down and met with him, and he made molasses cookies, which I can't stand since childhood, but I ate them because I didn't want to offend him. And we had tea and sat on his porch, and we talked about his experiences. And I remember talking to him, listening to him at Vine Street School in Bangor growing up. I told him about that, and he kind of delved into his experience a little more than I've read in literature or heard in his speeches. And then we talked about Jerry's saga and his thoughts on that. And interestingly, it was very sad because I left him on Thursday night, and I said, "Geez, Don, by the time I digest this, I may have a few more questions." He said, "Just call me on Monday. I'm leaving for Wednesday for Pennsylvania. I'm just packing from now till then, and you can either come back down or we can talk on the phone." I said, "Great." So I was supposed to call him on Monday, but at like 1 o'clock in the morning on Monday, he passed away. Mm. That was sad.
Well, it is a wonderful book and packed with great lessons and a really a powerful story about Geraldine Largay and her journey as well, and hope that many people are able to learn from that. Dee, thank you so much for visiting with us and talking about the book.
Thank you. Thank you, Rich. I remember meeting you as a high schooler, and you were a good guy then, and you're a good guy now, and a lot of people tell me you've done very well.
That's Dee Dauphiny, but the book is so good, When You Find My Body, The Disappearance of Geraldine Largay on the Appalachian Trail.